Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Solari Report. It's the third quarter wrap-up, the equity overview. We've had a lot of questions for the last quarter about what in the world is going on in the markets. And here to help me chew through this is a longtime friend of the Solari Report, Jason Wirth, who has worn many hats in his career. I always tease him because he did work for about 2 seconds at JP Morgan Chase. But congratulations, you got out of there. They did buy your firm. But Jason was an investment banker, a serial entrepreneur, and now is an asset manager. He has for a long time written many different pieces for the Solari Report, both in the wrap-ups and some great book reviews. So if you do a search for his name at Solari.com, both at the homepage and the library, you'll pick a lot up. And we put a detailed description of his background in the commentary for this equity overview. I want to remind everybody about the web presentation. I'm just going to screen share for a second here. If you click from the commentary for the third quarter wrap-up, you will find, let me just bring it up, the web presentation for the third quarter 2021 wrap-up. And I'm going to run through two pieces there. One is the charts. If you drop down in the navigation bar from financial markets, you'll see fixed income, commodities, equities. We'll run through that, as well as the Rambus chartology. For every third quarter wrap-up, we publish a technical analysis by Rambus, who I think hands down is the best technical analyst I know. So I'm going to run through those, and then Jason has prepared a very special presentation. It's been a lot of work, and it's very important. It's on hedging with equity, or running a hedged book on equity. And I just want to mention, Jason, how much I appreciate you doing this, because this is a topic that comes up again and again and again. And I thought, okay, we're going to chew through. This is going to be the definitive chew through on hedged equity to last, hopefully, for many years, so people can really understand the issue. So before we start, anything else you want to say about your background?
I just want to say thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to be on, and I'm looking forward to this. Thank you.
And no comments about how much fun it is to deal with managing money in this environment.
we'll get into that when I start talking.
it could be more exciting. It could be a pilot. Okay. So let's just dive in, and I'm going to do this quickly. I'm going to start with going to the wrap up presentation at Our Money. Again, go to financial markets. Let's just walk through the markets, and then a few words about Rambus, and hopefully Jason, you'll jump in. After spending all quarter and all year in money and markets describing all the amazing things that are happening to the U.S. Treasury and military, it's always amazing to see the dollar strong and rising. But there it goes again. So the dollar, very strong year so far. It's up 5%. But bonds, of course, you know, we've been talking for many years about the long-term bull market in bonds is over. And here you see in the first full chart, you see the bond aggregate, which is an ETF of mostly corporate bonds, up 3.21% for the year. And then that's junk. It's always amazing. The high yield bonds outperforming, of course, because investors want yield. And then the bond aggregate down 1.74%. And I would certainly say bonds are not keeping up with inflation. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Jason, but it's
I agree.
It's making cash look attractive. And then in the second chart, we have the intermediate treasury and the long treasury ETF. And long treasuries and the intermediate treasuries even performing more poorly than the bond aggregate. So intermediate down almost 4% and the long treasury down 7%. So clearly not holding with inflation. And this is a little bit nerve-wracking always for me to look at, Jason, because these are some of the biggest holdings in the pension funds. So yeah. Pension funds struggling to make their yields and insurance companies struggling to make their yields with this kind of performance. Okay, so let's quick look at commodities. And one of the questions, of course, in the stock market is what is the cost of energy going to do to stocks? So we've seen crude oil spiking tremendously this year. That's the crude oil chart. And of course, with it, Russia, who's doing, who's very dependent on fossil fuels. I just talked to somebody down in Australia. He said the coal stocks are flying on the Australian exchange. But fossil fuels clearly having a year and a good year. And when we look at the inflation chart, we'll see that the natural gas up. Silver and gold not having such a great year, I think to many people's surprise. I thought they'd do a little bit better. And here
They're
we
starting to
have,
turn right now, though, which is good.
yeah, and that's what Rambus says. One of his three pieces in this Rambus chartology is that he thinks precious metals are perking up, but so far down. GLD, the gold ETF, down 7%, 7.31% for the year, and silver down a little bit more than 12%. And then, of course, the miners worse than that. The bottom chart is one of the charts we show every week on money and markets. It's sort of the inflation chart. And what this keeps flashing for me every time is it's just inflation, inflation. The only thing that's really down in the basement is the VIX. And, that's really the Fed protecting, it's the Fed protecting a lot of people from a lot of risk of the real world. Anyway, so inflation is clearly with us, and we're hearing a lot more about that in the third quarter. So let me just turn a little bit to Rambus chartology. Rambus is a technical analyst. He's self-taught and I think really gifted. He has three pieces. If you go to the Rambus chartology, we link to, if you go all the way to the bottom of the page, you'll see links to all the historical ones. And it's just a wealth of charts. He's an amazing chartist. I don't know how much you use charts, Jason, but I love to watch them because they just compress so much historical knowledge about where things have been and how they're traded. And I just find
You
is it, it
definitely see in retrospect where trends turn
Right.
and it's really clear in the charts.
So first of all, he covers the precious metals complex, and they're quite perking up. And for those of you who don't know Rambus, he's sort of taken it on the chin for many years. He was one of the gold bugs following the bull into 2011, and then he basically said, "Okay, precious metals is over, and stocks are going to fly." And the precious metals community just went nuts on him. It was almost a religion, and the way they attacked him was quite remarkable. So he's very sensitive about precious metals. Anyway, so he goes to the PM complex. Then he, I love looking at his stock charts. So let me get down to equities because he, this is the Gold Bugs Index. He calls this stock market the most hated bull market in the history of the stock market. And every quarter, he sort of goes through the wall of worry and why people believe it just can't keep going up. And he's continued to call it as a bull, and he's been steadily right. And what he says this time, I'm trying to get out of precious metals and into, yeah, here we go. What he says this time is he continues to see, the all the technical signs indicating that the bull market is still underway. So now one of the things, of course, we see, I want to get to the chart I really wanted to focus on from Rambos. He calls it the history chart of the world. And I always love to look at charts like this when people tell me, the stock market's going to crash and it's going to be over forever. This chart takes you back to 78. And what you see is you see, that the market has trended up. I would argue a lot of that is simply debasement of the currency, but the market has trended up. But it's been kind of a wild ride. And one of the reasons I like looking at this chart is you can see there were many times on the way up that you would have loved to have been hedged. Because we're talking about some very deep dives. So this is the internet crash in 2000, then we have the 2009 crash. Here's the crash last February and March. So, you know, a long trend up, but some pretty wild rides. You know, I always tell people, go back to 1900 and pretend you had to protect your family capital through two world wars and a Great Depression. You know, that's what real resilience looks like. Anyway, any thoughts on the history here?
Well, as often as people think, oh my God, it's over, the market's crashing, it'll never be the same again, it always finds a way to come back. And if you can just find a way to be in the market, but be in a market that protects you in case there is a crash, I think it's smart.
So I have for many years talked about a scenario called planet equity, and I think, you know, I said at the end of the financial crisis, you can either, if you're Mr. Global, you can either mark the equity up or mark the debt down. And if I were Mr. Global, I'd mark the equity up. And that's what I continue to see happening. If you look at the extraordinary performance of the stock market since the drop in February 20th, you know, what you're seeing is you're seeing unprecedented monetary and fiscal stimulus, and of course it's trading into asset inflation in the equity markets. And that's one of the reasons I think it's very painful to stay in bonds. So then Rambus's last section is on the energy markets. It's all the way at the most of this is the equity markets. And then so he goes into the energy complex and just shows you the extraordinary rise in the sort of particularly fossil fuels. And one of my big questions for the equity markets, the biggest component of corporate expenses in the US, particularly manufacturing, is energy. So if the energy complex continues to rise dramatically, it's going to absolutely have an impact
And
on
they're
corporate
certainly calling
profit.
for that this coming winter, so we'll get to see it firsthand if that comes true.
Okay, so one of the things that I concluded when I was still managing money, let me just stop the screen share. One of the things I concluded was that if you were going to come up with a strategy that worked, the best strategy was to be buy and hold unless you turn from a bull to a bear market and then you just go to cash. And if you just sit in cash until you go back to proving a bull, you'll be fine. Now that sounds great, Jason, but implementing it, you know, because several times now we've seen the market go down, depending on whether you count close or intraday, 30 to 35%, and then boom, it pops back out. So I'll never forget, I talked to one manager who swore he had the formulae. You know, he had the algorithms and the AI. It was a big firm, and swore that he could, you know, that they could figure it, and all you had to do was follow the program. And sure enough, in February 2020, down they go. They wait, then they get out, and then bam, it flies back up, and they're hung. You know, and it's anyway. So it's much harder to do than you think, because it can be down 35% before a bear is proven. It can be down 40% before a bear is proven. And I think it's hard for many people, particularly coming out of the financial crisis, to take that kind of down. So obviously, one of the strategies that works is hedged equity. And when I say this, there are a lot of lay people who are not financial people who think I mean hedge funds. No, has nothing to do with hedge funds. One is hedged equity. And to me, this is a very attractive strategy in a world where bonds don't work anymore the way they used to. So this is a way of staying in the market, but protecting yourself on the downside. And what is interesting is I spent, while I was still an investment advisor, many years talking people through the pros and cons of hedged equity, only when the market swung wildly to have it all run out of their head and to call me back and say, are you sure this is what we should be doing? So I finally realized, okay, what I want to do is I want to go through hedged equity, the pros and cons in great detail, so we have one place where everybody can hear it. And
Got it.
I'm very
And
grateful.
archive it.
I'm very grateful because this is a strategy I know you've worked through and you've thought a lot about the pros and cons, both with clients and personally. So you're the perfect person to do this. So
Thank you.
anyway, so let me turn it over to you. You have a presentation. Take us away.
Well, let me, before I dive into the presentation, let me just say that I'm someone that came from a modest blue-collar family where I was taught, finish the food on your plate, save your money, do not gamble, do not throw your money away, be very careful. So as I've gone through life, you know, when you get that instillment, if that's the right word, when you get that at a young age, that carries through a long time with you. And I managed to go to a good school, got a good business degree. I came out, was working in Wall Street of all places, and about three years after graduating from business school, I finally felt like, okay, now I've got some money that I can invest. I'd been paying off my student loans. You move around the country when you get new jobs and so forth. So I finally had some money to invest, and I thought, okay, I'm going to go and put it in the market. It was hard for me to do this because I viewed the market from my upbringing as being, you know, risky. You can lose your money. So right. Lo and behold, I go, and, you know, at this point in time, around the year 1999, tech stocks are just going through the roof, and everybody's making a lot.
Oh, no.
You know where the story's going. So I don't have children at the time, certainly didn't have children then, but I thought I'm going to put $3,000 each into two trust accounts for my nephews. My sister had two boys and they were very young. And I thought, you know, let me put $3,000 in for each. And then every year, maybe I'll add a little bit to it. And then by the time they're ready to go to college, it'll be, you know, a nice pot there for them to use. So in January of the year 2000,
this is so painful.
I bought $6,000 worth of technology mutual funds, and within days, that $6,000 was worth $3,000. And, you know, my memory's a little foggy. It could have taken a little more than a few days. It could have been not quite $3,000. But nevertheless, it, you know, looking back on it, I lost half my money in a very short time period. I would have done better going to Atlantic City, I think. So So that really set me back. You know, the inclination to be very cautious, and then the first time you really venture into it, to have that happen, it took years to become comfortable investing again. And in fact, Catherine, I owe it to you because we had a consultation. I sat down with you in 2015, and you looked at my situation, and you said, Jason, you have far too much in cash. You just can't be sitting in cash. And I said to you, but Catherine, as soon as I go to invest in the money, I'm going to lose it, you know, lose part of it. And you said, well, then invest with a hedge. It was one of the best words I'd ever heard in my life. And I went to business school. I worked on Wall Street. I thought I knew what hedging was. I didn't know what hedging was. I really spent a lot of time to learn this and study it and understand it. So let me just say this. Anyone out there who is concerned about the markets, you're hesitant to put your money to work, I get it. I've been there. I understand that. And but I can tell you, I hope that my experience over the last, you know, decade or so will be of benefit to people listening to this. And so with that, let me dive into the charts and explain how hedging works. And let me do the screen share here. And we can see that chart.
Yep.
Okay. So this represents 2/3 of an account that you're going to see the final third on the next page. But the red line represents equity investment in common stocks that pay good dividends. And there's about 20 stocks that are in that red line because, you know, statistics show that, you know, you buy 20 right. nicely diversified stocks, you're going to get good diversification. You start
what
going
year
above
does
20.
That start? It starts in 2015.
Yeah, about the fourth quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter of 2015. The green line below it is cash. And around the time that this by the way, this is a person's portfolio who gave me permission to discuss this. So I just want to say that as a backdrop. Around the time that this money was invested, there had been a downturn just before this. And so the stock market was looking a little bit shaky.
Right.
And there was another downturn shortly after this was invested. So if you see the cash amount, there's a fairly good amount of cash there. It's because the person managing this account wanted to be careful and cautious in case there was a further downturn. So not everything was put into equities right away. And it's a little hard, you know, you follow that red line and it's hard to see what's really happening with the equities because you got cash going in and coming out at times. So really, I think if you look at the black line at the top, the black line there represents the total of the equities invested and the cash that's not invested. And you can see it kind of bumps along close to that $500,000 mark for, about two years or so.
Right.
And then in the beginning part of 2019, it starts to go up. You know, as we all know from recent memory, let me see if my cursor can go over here. As we all know from recent memory, this big downturn there, that's the COVID crash in the first quarter of 2000 last year. And, you know, if you think about it, if you were to draw a line backwards from where the bottom of that V crash is, so to speak, back in time, The last time you crossed that mark is about a little over 3 years earlier. So that,
right.
You know, if you had sold at the bottom of that COVID crash, you may as well have not been invested for 3 years, or you'd have been better off putting it in something else. So, and too often people react, incorrectly when you have a crash like that. You sell
right.
at the bottom, you sell on the way down, and then, you know, without the fortitude or patience to wait it out, you've just lost money.
So I just want to mention before you leave that chart, one of the hardest things to do when you're managing money.
Yep.
You know, it's always great to have cash to buy opportunistically in any condition, because you're always having, I'll never forget one stock that I really liked got whacked on an earnings report, was down 18%, you know, just, and the market was stable. You know, so you have opportunities like that. You want to have cash. But I notice if you look at that big drop, there's a little bit more cash, and then wham, you're down. And that is a real opportunity. That really helps the portfolio. But
right.
it's hard to be, you know, it's hard to have cash sitting and not doing anything. But there is a reason you always have some cash in a portfolio like
right.
this.
Right. Right. So I'm going to advance to the next screen. But before I do that, I want people to look kind of at that black line and try to memorize it to the extent possible. See how much it's moving up and down, and especially where that COVID correction that we were just talking about. Look how far down that V-shaped down and up recovery is. And I'm going to advance to the next slide. And, oops, let me go over here. Okay, this is the same account that you were just looking at. The red line's the same,
right.
The green line's the same, but this has the third element included in it, and the third element is the hedge. In the hedge, in this case, are put options on the Standard & Poor's 500 index. And I'm going to, in the next couple of slides, I'll go into a little more detail on how a hedge actually works, but suffice it to say that the hedge kicks in and becomes more valuable when whatever you're hedging against goes down in value. So
right.
a lot of time, I think people have a hard time understanding, well, how can I buy something that goes up when the stock market goes down? You can. It's called a put. and you can see here, if my cursor's moving, so a lot of times you buy a put. If you don't need it, the put slowly loses value. And this is probably a
right.
situation here where it goes up. We bought a new put, or the investor, the manager bought a new put, and it slowly goes down in value. So when you don't need the put, as I like to say, it's like an insurance policy. You have
right.
car insurance in case something bad happens to your car. You have house insurance in case something bad happens to your house. A hedged portfolio, a put, is a lot like, people do actually use the word portfolio insurance to describe its role. If you buy it and you don't need it, it's okay. It's like, you know, your homeowner's insurance policy. But, you know, when the tree falls on your roof, you're glad you have it. And that's exactly what happened here with COVID. When the stock market had its big decline, that put went up in value because it's a hedge. It's a bet that if something goes bad in
right.
the market, it gains value. So you can see what's really, I think, the really interesting takeaway is the black line at the top. It doesn't move around quite as bit as on the prior page, because that put, you know, it goes up when the market goes down, and so it helps to smooth things out quite a bit. And you can especially see in this area here where COVID hit, you know, this didn't drop down like you saw on the prior page, because the put going up in value offsets the decline in the equities going down in value. And I would much rather wake up on the morning of a crash with a cup of coffee and the newspaper in hand and read how bad things are when I have a put in my account than not. So what I'd like to do, I'm sure everybody's wondering, like, how does this go up in value when the market goes down? I'd like to transition to that on the next couple of slides.
Okay.
To talk about a put and how a put works, I find it's really helpful to talk about the opposite of the put, which is a call. If you understand a call, which is easier kind of to wrap your mind around, it's a little bit easier to transition to how a put works. So a call option gives you the right, but not the obligation, to buy something, whatever the call is written on, at a predetermined point in time, or at a predetermined price.
Right.
So we'll just make an example here. ABC Beverage Corporation. You may think it's a good investment. Maybe it's trading at $40 a share right now. You could pay $5 for the opportunity to buy it. The call would cost $5 to buy it at some later point in time. And typically, you agree to buy it at a higher price. So maybe it's trading today at 40. You say, I'd like to pay $5 for the opportunity to buy it at $45. We'll see this on the next page. And if it goes up, then you can exercise the put. and buy it and make a profit. If it doesn't go up, you haven't lost anything more than what you paid for.
Sometimes you'll see if people have, you know, large capital gains that you know, in a taxable account, you'll see advisors recommend rather than selling or taking the gains to make generate income by selling calls.
Right. So if the stock price goes up, it works out. If it doesn't, all you have at risk is what you paid for the call in the first place. So here's just a couple examples, really, to kind of put some numbers to it. And this, I was starting to say this on the prior page. If you think something's going to go up in value, you could go out in this column here. This is where you're actually, there's no call involved. You're buying the stock. So you go and you spend $40 to buy ABC Beverage Corporation. If everything works out, if you think it's going to double in price and it goes to 80, congratulations, you've made $40 or you've made 100% return on your investment. Another way that you can bet that something's going to go up is you buy a call and it takes a lot less money. Maybe you spend $5. In this case, you know, like I was saying on the prior page, the strike price is usually a little bit above where you're buying it. And that causes you to pay less for the call. And if everything works out properly and the stock goes to 80, just like in the first example, you can make a lot more money. And the reason why is you're putting less upfront and you're getting more of the upside. So in that same situation, if you'd bought a call instead of the stock itself, you'd make 600% as opposed to just doubling your money and making 100%. But for all the extra that you get there, you know, there's a downside. There's the opposite where if things don't work out exactly like you think, if you buy the stock and it, let's say it goes up $5, you make 12.5%, you've still made some money. But if you buy the call option and it doesn't get above the strike price that you enter into, you've lost what you've invested on the the call. So there's a lot more reward, but a lot more risk with these options. So with that as a backdrop, and the strategy you saw on the prior page didn't use calls, but it did use puts. So I wanted to introduce the call as a way to really show how the put works. The put is the opposite. Put gives you the right to sell something at a predetermined price. These put and call options, they're good for a certain time period. The put and call markets are very complex. You can agree to have the right to buy or sell, you know, to buy or sell something for a quarter, 6 months, a year, 18 months. You can go out of...
You can do long ones.
Yeah, you can do very long-term periods. And likewise, the strikes can vary quite a bit, too. The strikes do vary quite a bit. You could agree to, you know, sell something at $45, $46, $46.50. So when you add up all the different time frames and all the different strike prices, it is a complex myriad of options out there.
Right.
And so how the put works, it's how you make money when something goes down in value is... In this case, again, you pay, let's just say you pay $5 to buy the put, and let's say ABC Beverage Corporation is trading at $40 a share today, and you agree to sell it, or the put gives you the opportunity to sell it at $35 a share. If that stock falls $5, then you're starting to get to a point where you can make money. And let's just say an extreme example here is the company goes bankrupt and goes out of business. You could buy for maybe a penny a share or 10 cents a share, some very low price. You could buy the stock and you turn around to the person that sold you the put and they are legally obligated. You have a contract with that person. That person has to buy the shares at $35 if you've agreed in advance and you paid them for the put option. So you could go to that person with something that's, you know, very low value or practically worthless and say, hey, remember that contract we entered into about, you know, 5 months ago? I'd like you to buy these worthless shares for $35. And they're obligated to do that, and they will do that. So here's a mathematical example. Again, just like we did with the calls, you could buy. I'll kind of go quickly through the first column, but if the equivalent of trying to make money on a stock, if you think it's going to go down, is you sell it short. And selling it short basically means you borrow it from Paul, you turn around, you sell it to Steve. And if the price goes down in value, you buy it back, you know, from somebody on the open market to return to Paul, and you capture the difference between the lower price that you buy it back at and the price that Paul's obligated to pay you for it, or that you borrowed it from Paul. So that's selling short. Very dangerous, very risky. I don't recommend anybody but the most experienced of traders and money managers do it. But you can accomplish a very similar objective by owning a put. And
right.
A put, in this case, you could buy a put maybe for $4 a share. In this case, you know, this is the obligation where the person's agreed to buy it back at $40. If it drops down to $10 a share, you capture all the profit between the strike price and what it fell to, because you can
right.
buy it back, sell it to the person who agreed to buy it from you. And in this case, again, you see here 525%. That's just one example, you know, potentially large gains that you can achieve when the market falls. And but the corollary, the contrary, if things don't work out in the bottom example, you lose what you pay for the put. If you don't, it's like insurance. You know, you
right.
paid
so
for insurance on the house.
If you don't have a car crash, you're
right.
You paid
right.
your insurance and you get nothing from it other than the, you know, knowing that if you'd had a car crash. In other
right.
words, it's funny though, you know, here's one of the reasons I wanted to do this today. And that is I have constantly, you know, I used to, when I was still doing investment advisory, I would have clients who didn't mind paying for car insurance that they didn't have to exercise. They didn't mind paying for home insurance that they didn't have to exercise. But
right.
the idea of paying for a put that they never needed to use was really infuriating.
Right, right, right.
You know, they would watch the money sort of run out the bottom of the portfolio. And
but
so, right,
if,
that was...
If they were to go through a 9/11 event, a COVID event, somewhere where they see a lot of their wealth could have been wiped out, it changes
right.
their viewpoint. So you need to take a long-term view and understand it's there for a reason.
Right.
It's not always going to provide you a return, but when you really need it, you're going to be glad you have it.
Well, here's the question. Which is worse for you? Is it worse to wake up and find yourself down 50% because you wanted to save money on the put? Or is it
yeah.
worse to wake up and you know, and the money sort of drained out of the port? In other words, you've got to look at the worst side of being hedged or not hedged, and which one is worse for you.
Yeah,
that's what it comes down to.
Exactly. And think of another way to think about it is, you know, obviously you're going to be glad you have it when there's a market downturn. But let's just say there isn't a market downturn. At the end of the day, you're still 90 to 95% invested in equities. And therefore, as the market's drifting up, you're making money, but what you've spent on the put that didn't really provide a return, it's just eating a little bit into the profit you might otherwise have captured.
Right. It's a drag. It's a
yeah.
drag on the if we knew we were in a long-term bull market
yeah.
and we didn't care about the ups and downs, we just never do a hedge and just let it go up and down and not worry about it. So
right.
if you're 20 years old and you're putting your first amount of money in the stock market and you're not planning on touching it till you retire, you probably wouldn't want to do a hedge, because why spend the money? Just let it run up and run down and don't care about it.
Right.
But if
right.
you've spent your whole life saving and you've made it through the financial crisis and you don't want to take a 35 to 50% down, you know, then a little drag on your portfolio is worth it.
Right.
Right.
Right. And in this lower right example here, you see you bought a stock for 40, it went up to 50. So you have a $10 gain in the security itself. If you paid $4 for the put, instead of making a 10% return on that scenario, you made 6%.
Right.
You still made money. So that's an example
right.
of what we
that's
were just
better
discussing.
Better than nothing in the bond market.
Exactly.
Right.
So going back to the prior slide, what I wanted to do was kind of zoom in. Now that we understand a little bit better how the puts work and how they can go up when the market goes down, I wanted to zoom in on this COVID era and show what this portfolio did when we experienced COVID. So the prior page was weekly. This page is daily. So there's more detail. And this is just from the beginning of 2020 till the end of May 2020. So it's a five-month snapshot before
right.
and after COVID.
Right.
And you can see here this portfolio, the highest that the equities were prior to the downturn was in late January, and the equities were worth about $631,000. You know, you can see it zigzag along a little bit, and then
right.
when news of COVID was hitting, it goes down, you know, classic crash kind of downturn. 32% of the value of these equities were lost in a very short time frame. And during that time, as you see here, if my mouse is working, right around this time, there was a put that was in the account that had been sold, and a new put was purchased to take its place. I think the person managing this account was worried about the outlook, and they wanted to get the best protection at that point in time. And so there were puts for this size portfolio. It was determined that about $35,000 worth of puts was the appropriate investment to protect the account. And you can see here that after the market really starts to decline, that put goes up in value. That $35,000 investment became as valuable as $160,000 at the peak in kind of mid to late March. And then about 3 days later, when that put was ultimately sold and cashed out, so to speak, $109,000 was realized on a $35,000 investment. So that was
Now available, if you don't roll over completely, is now available to buy stocks cheap.
Exactly. And that's exactly right. What happened in this case. I have a comment here on the slide that after that put was sold, about $80,000 worth of equities were purchased at what in retrospect turned out to be a very good time in the market, because we saw the market recover and go up at that point. And about, I think about 40,000, well, some a good portion of the money that was used to buy those equities was from the proceeds from the put, and the rest was from cash that was sitting in the account. So you get to the end of the key takeaway here is, with the puts in this account only went down at the worst point 7.9% in value. Ideally you have just the right amount of protection that you don't lose any value, but nevertheless, in this crazy time, the account had declined close to 8%, but that's much less, than this person would have experienced if they didn't have the put. They would have been down 32%.
Right.
And then as we see the market recover and everything started to trade up from there, and the rest is history. But the key takeaway is you don't have to worry that you're going to wake up and just see you've been wiped out, because that put is going to kick in when you need it if everything's done properly.
So, I just have to say, for most people, watching the value of their portfolio drop that much in a short period of time is absolutely breathtaking.
Yeah.
Especially because if you're like you and me and you know what's going on.
Yeah.
You're really worried, okay. The markets live through thick and thin, but World War III may be too much for it. So it's a scary feeling.
I don't think every investor should have a hedged portfolio, and we're gonna see on the next page an example where I think it makes sense. So I've taken the same chart that we've just been looking at with the hedged account, and I've overlaid on top of it this magenta colored line on top of it. That's the Standard & Poor's 500 index. And you can see that, if you had put $500,000 into both strategies at the end of, near the end of 2015, the hedge strategy would have done better in the early couple days here, or early couple months, because this is where the stock market had declined, but this portfolio held up. And then I'm not sure exactly what happened here. Towards the end of 2016, the S&P just took off. It could have been some of the high flyer tech stocks that really went up. Now, the stocks that are invested in this portfolio, they tend not to be high flyer tech stocks. They're more stable, dividend paying, high quality stocks that, they're number one, two, three in their industry, but they're not necessarily.
So part of the drag is the beta of the portfolio. Just being more conservative, right.
So, so the S&P does get ahead of this portfolio, but here you see during this COVID crash, had you not had the hedge, even though you may have risen to a higher point before all this, it still fell through the value of this hedged account, because this hedged account, it's more of a steady eddy, kind of marshal along and not lose value in bad times. But then again, after the COVID crash, we've seen a really big pop in the market. Those people who got out and didn't get back in, unfortunately, they've left a lot of money on the table. And it's so easy to do that. It's so easy to get out and you get spooked, and then you don't know when's the right time to get back in. And you really, the really nice thing about having a hedged account is you can be in the market for the times that the market's, going up and building value, and you don't have to worry about just losing it all in a big downturn, because that hedge will kick in. Right. So who should have a hedge and who shouldn't have a hedge? The way I like to look at it, you know, if you're mowing lawns at the age of 15 and putting money in the bank, you don't need a hedge. You know, if you're in your younger years and you're kind of saving up to build a house, or you want to put your kid through college and you're saving up for those big bills, you shouldn't have a hedge, because at that stage in your life, your game is, you know, you want to build value, build your nest egg, and be able to utilize it for your needs. But when you start getting, and there's no magic age, I'm not going to say that any one age you should start doing it, but when you start getting into your 40s, 50s, certainly your 60s and 70s, when you're at the point where you've made your lifetime money, you've got your nest egg, it's more important at that point to make sure it doesn't go down than it is to really
right.
get that extra dollar on the upside. That's when you really should be thinking about having a hedge, and I think that's where it makes sense.
Well, 10 years ago, you know, everybody would say, we're just going to move the amount of fixed income higher and higher.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
and so you would move, you would reallocate out of equities into you know, probably municipal bonds, or but more into fixed income. And
right.
the problem is, given the credit deterioration and the yield deterioration in the fixed income is really not the alternative it was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I like about hedged equity is, you know, it's not zero or one. If you, let's say that if the day had come when you wanted to do a lot of, or normally you would have gone more to fixed income, you say, no, I don't want to go there because it's just an inflation arbitrage that works against me. I'm going to stay in equities. You don't have to have 100% of your equities in hedged equity. If you,
right.
you know, you can make a decision to hedge 50% or
yep.
25%, or, you know, it depends on your risk profile. It depends on how much you can tolerate going down.
Right.
But I think if you believe sort of the planet equity Rambus scenario, but you don't want to take that 30% down, and you don't trust the politicians to do what, you know, to run the equity markets in a enlightened manner, then hedged equity is something you want to consider.
Right.
Anyway,
right.
so.
And to your point about bonds, the next slide really is going to make that point. It used to be, you know, the good old days,
right.
you would put maybe in your younger years, 90% in equity and 10% in bonds. And as you get older in life, you start moving that more to 50-50. And then when you're up in age, you're 90% in bonds and 10% in equity. That was. A possibility back when bonds were paying a reasonable rate. And you can see here, this is the 30-year treasury. Back in the 90s, you could get 5, 6, 7%, sometimes even higher. That worked out then. But as we've seen this destruction in the rates that they've paid, you know, for the last decade and more, you know, we've seen a little bit of a rebound here. It's up to 2% or so at this point,
right.
But you're lucky to keep up with inflation at that point. If anything, you're probably falling behind.
There's no way you can keep up with inflation.
I mean,
if you look at what's going on with food prices or the sort of the common house of, you know, household goods, there's just no way you're, you know, I don't know what things are like in Pennsylvania, but I dare say your food bill is not holding steady at 2% gains.
Right.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, Jason, this has been very useful. So tell me, I'm going to ask you to guess, of all the people who say they don't mind living through the downs, what percent really can live through the downs?
Well, I mean, inevitably they're forced to, cause they don't have a choice, but you know, all things being equal, you know, I'll answer that a slightly different way. And I'll just say, if now that you know what a hedge can do for you, if you have the option to do it, you know, why not? But, it's hard to say how many people, you know, can't live through the downs, but clearly you have to, by extension, you have to cut back on everything to just get through, or else
right.
you run up your credit cards and then you got a whole new set of problems at that point.
Right. Right. Okay. Anything else you want to point out at the market? I had one question I wanted to ask, cause I've been following pretty closely the government's efforts to do employee mandates. And, I'm just preparing money in markets for this week. And there's a new article this morning. They have put fines in the infrastructure package, the $3.5 trillion. And again, I don't know if it's going to go through, but they've put in fines of $70,000 to $700,000 for companies that don't implement the mandates. Even there's no basis in law. We don't have a law. We don't have a rule. We don't have anything.
Yeah.
If the sheriff of Nottingham is going to start shaking down companies to implement, you know, a whole variety of policies, whether you like them or not, and companies really, you know, the strength of the U.S. stock market has always been confidence globally in the rule of law.
Right.
But if the sheriff of Nottingham is going to shake down companies and control the equity markets, you know, are equities a place to be? That's really my question.
Well, I think yes, largely for the reason being that where else are you going to put your money? I mean, you can,
right.
We just discussed bonds. They don't play the role they used to. You could go out, you could buy rental income, you know, have apartments and rent them out. And I think that can play a nice role in some people's portfolios. I know some people who do that and as opposed to investing
right.
in the stock market at all, but you've got a lot of headaches there. You got a lot of upkeep. You got, you know, maybe you have a property management firm. Well, that firm just ends up eating into your profits anyway. So, if you want to dabble in cryptocurrencies, I view it as a gambling joint. Maybe you're going to do real well, but it could disappear just as easily. So,
right. So
where else are you going to put your money? And you know, I look at, you know, just to use an example, Bill Gates, right? I mean, Bill Gates is a very powerful person. We may not all agree with his world viewpoints, but he's in the stock market, so he's you know, he's built all his wealth.
Well, he's in farmland.
And farmland. But
so
he's
running up the housing prices all across America. One of the things I talk a lot about, and I've done a lot more in the other equity overviews, is the importance of resilience. So any investment you can make to lower your nut, and you are a person who's done a lot to try and, you know, whether it's in your household or in your, I mean, you're a person who's invested a lot of time and money in resiliency.
Right. Right.
And so you believe in that.
I do. What I like to caution people or recommend to people who are worried, hey, you know, are we heading into a really dark time ahead? You know, should I take everything and buy gold coins and silver bars? You know, here's what you can do, right? First and foremost, get a pantry of food supplies, whether it's dehydrated food or canned goods or something that if things get really bad, you don't have to worry about food so much. And then secondly, depending on where in the country you live, at one point I lived in a desert, I had barrels of water in my garage because,
right.
you know, that was a risk to me. And so if you need, you know, stock up on food, stock up on water, stock up on, have a generator. So if you lose power, you know, you can at least keep your refrigerator and freezer going. I live in a part of the country now where I can literally drive just a couple miles down the road and buy a quarter of a cow from a farmer. And I've done that now twice. And so get everything. If we're in a lights out scenario, if there's a neutron bomb or whatever they're called that's exploded over the country and everything just goes out, the electric grid and the communications grid and everything, you know, get yourself set up. You know, I don't mean to be so doom and gloom, but when you get that behind you, when you have to, when you stop worrying about that, it gives you so much, first of all, freedom and
right.
and power to then begin
well,
to think about.
Well, it's a real asset hedge.
Right.
Right.
Right. Yep. And then beyond that, okay, well, then you can really start saying how much gold coins and silver bars should I have? I don't recommend people keep more than maybe 15% of their wealth in that because, you know, for one thing, God forbid, you know, someone breaks into your house, puts a gun to your head and your wife's head and says, where's the gold and silver? What are you going to do then? You know, so
right.
have as much on hand as is going to be prudent for when you actually need it, but don't have so much on hand that you know, heaven
it's
forbid something like
Yeah,
right. yeah. And you can, of course, you can have it in vault, you can have it somewhere off-site, but then there's issues getting access to it if you really need it at that point, too. So so do what you can to sleep better at night, you know, and you know, food, water, precious metals. Then
right, but
you can
it's not either or, because I've watched you for many years work through all the issues from stockpiling and managing real assets to having your money in securities or in other jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You've gone and it's never either or.
Right.
I think of it like a chessboard. You
right.
want to field your players on the board in a way and you're trying to, you know, in World War III, you're trying to make sure that that in the worst case, you know, they get some of your players but they don't get all of them.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right.
Right.
I totally agree. And it takes a time and effort and energy and when it was hard for me to make that first step. I used to complained to my wife a lot about my fears and concerns and worries. And one day she stopped and she looked at me straight in the eye and she said, "So what are you going to do about it? Or what have you done about it?" Even better. And I was taken aback because I you know, here I was, you know, this is when I was living in a desert and worried about water of all things. And so, so I, literally within a very short time period is when I got the barrels and filled them up with water. And once I did that, I thought this, I can do this, you know, and you, I think the most important thing, take the first step. Once you get the first step, then the rest kind of fall into place because you're on a path at that point.
Right. But to me, and this is the hardest thing I need to communicate, because many people who subscribe to the Salier Report have been brought up to believe that they can't figure it out for themselves.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What I keep trying to tell them is, no, you can, because one of the things I learned as an investment advisor, the plan you come up for the this person is totally different. You know, if any of my clients had ever managed their money the way I manage my money, I would have killed them.
Right.
It's like,
right.
No, I have a purpose. I'm going to spend my money for my purpose, and my purpose is right for me, but it's not right for you.
Right.
And so everybody can take responsibility to go through all the different aspects, whether it's your stockpiling or doing your disaster recovery kit or getting a generator, all the way to doing investments. You know, and there's a whole portfolio of different options, and only you can govern that. Only you can make those decisions. And if you've gone through the different decisions and the different scenarios, and you know why you own what you own.
Right.
So I'll tell you a funny story. I'll never forget when I first started investing in gold and silver. You know, gold would take these enormous swan dives down and be down. You know, you'd be at 400 and the next day you'd be at 340. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Right.
And I'll never forget the first time I bought gold and it took a nosedive. I mean, even though I was prepared, it took my breath away.
Yeah.
Then I got used to it, and I just got used to saying, oh, well, it's, you know, it's good. I have some nice land and I'm growing food and all this other stuff. But then I remember putting my first client and warning them for days, you know, gold is very volatile. You need to understand it, blah, 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 blah. We got in at 400. It went to 340, you know, a week later. And and all of his friends were trying to convince him that I was a charlatan.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, when it went over 1,000, we used to laugh about how great it was he got it at 400.
Right, right.
But anyway, so each one of us has to take responsibility. No one can give you that plan. In this environment, you got to do it yourself, because what we're dealing with is not investment risk. We're dealing with political risk. And there's no financial solution for that kind of political risk. There's no, you know, you're dealing with real risk, and you're dealing with having to navigate in a world where there are a lot of people and institutions are not trustworthy. It's just the way it is.
Yep. And but yet you have the power to get yourself as well fortified and positioned as you can. So you can't control everything, but that much at least you can control.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, I know whatever goes on, you're going to be in good shape.
I'm trying.
I knew you'd say that. Okay, Jason Wirth, thank you for joining us on the third quarter wrap-up equity overview.
Thank you.
I look forward to being in cahoots. happy hedging.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.